Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, big trade in the NFL, and are the rich getting richer?
Who are the winners and losers of the 2013 NFL Scouting Combine, and what are the next destinations for the big-time free agents like Mike Wallace, Dwight Freeney, and Osi Umenyiora?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. And with us is Hub Arkush, the publisher and editor. And joining us on the phone is senior editor Nolan Naraki. And the big news, guys, this week, the Chiefs and 49ers made the deal for Alex Smith. Second-round draft choice from the Chiefs to San Francisco this year. Conditional third-rounder that could become a second-rounder next year. Talk a little bit about that trade, Nolan. And, you know, again, this is, sounds like the first major deal, obviously, for the Andy Reid, John Dorsey regime in Kansas City.
Yeah, you know, to start your franchise, you need a franchise quarterback, and that's what Andy Reid needed to do. He went out and got the best one. A lot of people around the league think he gave up a little bit too much, but we've seen it in the past. Andy Reid has done a very good job recognizing the talent of quarterbacks. He recognized when to trade A.J. Feely to the Dolphins, received a second-round pick, also shipped off Kevin Cobb at the right time to Arizona and received quite a ransom in return, second rounder, along with Dominic Rogers-Cromartie. So, you know, if you look at his history, he's done a very good job of recognizing quarterbacks that can play. And I think he found a perfect fit in his offense right now with Alex Smith. He's very cerebral. He can make all the adjustments. Andy's wanted to run a more complex offense for some time, and I think Smith can do everything that he wants to do offensively. So I think it's a very good deal for both sides and should be the key to really getting that regime off to the right start.
You know, Nolan, I'm a little puzzled as to why people around the league would be critical of this. Alex Smith he led his team to a 13-3 record in 2011. He had a remarkable performance in the divisional playoffs against the Saints, played well enough to get him to a Super Bowl, if not for a couple special teams gaffes. He comes back this year, is the fourth-rated quarterback in the entire NFL when he loses his job due to injury. He was the number one overall selection in the draft 7 years ago. I don't think they paid all that much for a guy who could be their franchise quarterback for the next 5-6 years.
Well, the prevailing thought is that he was going to be cut, and I don't think that's the case because, as we've seen in a lot of situations, you really need two quarterbacks to thrive in this league. And, you know, with Colin Kaepernick being a versatile threat on the ground, there's a chance that he could become injured. So, you know, it would have been a good insurance policy to keep him around. And I think the 49ers were aware of that. And to receive potentially two second-rounders is right in line with what we've seen in past years with the Matt Schaub trade when he went from Atlanta to Houston. So I agree with you that it was a fair trade and a win-win situation for everybody involved.
All right, guys, let me play the devil's advocate for a moment here, because a lot of the criticism in Kansas City is the fact that the Chiefs are just, you know, paying for and bringing in kind of a backup quarterback type of thing, the Matt Cassel deal. The last starting quarterback the Chiefs drafted and actually won a game for them, Todd Blackledge, over 30 years ago. And so a lot of people are critical of this trade because, again, they go for somebody's backup quarterback, they bring him in, they're going to make him the franchise quarterback. But this kid, this Alex Smith deal, this is a lot different than the Matt Cassel thing, isn't it?
I really believe it is. I think it's a much better fit. If you look at Alex Smith early in his career, he really struggled with a lot of different issues. But ever since Jim Harbaugh arrived, it really the game began to slow down for him. It made sense. They were able to manage him. You know, if you want to break it down, Alex Smith is truly more of a game manager. He's an above-average starter. He's not an elite quarterback who you want to lead you to the Super Bowl. But I don't think they necessarily were thinking 3 years out when they made this decision. I think they're trying to build towards a future, similar to the way they did with Doug Peterson and Donovan McNabb. That first year, Peterson was in place. They had a veteran in the locker room that can really show them the ropes. I think they'll try to find a way to bring in a young quarterback and continue working with them. But for the short term, I think Alex Smith provided the most competitive option for him at this time.
Well, Wayne, yeah, two quick things. Number one, he had been a backup at times, but that was as much Mike Singletary's fault as anything else. Over the last 2 years, one of the most effective starters in the NFL with one of the best teams in the NFL. And this business of him being released, I don't know what people were thinking, because we know In addition to the Chiefs, the Arizona Cardinals were very interested, and there's at least a half a dozen other teams in the league that desperately want a quarterback, too. So this was absolutely a seller's market, and I applaud what the 49ers got done here.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing is, Hub, when you think about, you know, all right, again, people making the comparison with Matt Castle. Matt Castle had 1 year where Tom Brady went down with an injury, and Castle piloted a team to an 11-5 record. He wasn't the only reason why they were 11-5. That was a pretty good team around him in New England that year. This is different. Alex Smith has a lot of experience, and you get the feeling that he can be a guy who they can win with for the next 4 or 5 years. He's only 29 years old.
Absolutely. And again, you know, Matt Castle, a free agent, they paid big money. This guy comes with a contract that's a starter's contract, but it's not a top-heavy or unreasonable contract. So, and he gets Andy Reid, which is a bonus after coming out of Jim Harbaugh's camp. So, you know, obviously they got to get on the field and play it, but I really like them.
Yeah, and I like the coaching fit, especially, Hub. You bring up a good point. I mean, you've got to have the right coach for these guys, especially at that position. Hey, Nolan, you spent some time. You looked over the combine. I mean, obviously you're putting work together for the draft notebook that's going to be coming out later this year. But talk a little bit about some of the players that stood out to you in the combine that maybe are going to be on the rise as we head toward the draft.
Well, the offensive tackle that I thought really lit up the combine came from Arkansas Pine Bluff, Terran Armstead. You put on the tape, he's got great feet, natural bend, and he came out and had an outstanding workout, bench pressed 225, 31 times, ran a 4.71, better than any other offensive tackle the last 15 years. I think he has all the tools you want in a left tackle. You know, coming in, I thought he was more of a second to third round type of talent. It wouldn't shock me if he starts creeping up into the first round the same way Dwayne Brown did years ago. A couple others that I thought really stood out were Ziggy Ansah from BYU. I think everybody kind of expected him to have a great workout. The tape doesn't necessarily reflect that yet, but it could in a couple of years, and I think there's a chance he'll be a top 15 pick, similar to Pierre Paul, just because of all of his upside and athletic ability. And then Cornelius Washington from Georgia, the outside linebacker. He played out of position this year at the five technique position. They had two very talented outside linebackers in Jarvis Jenkins and a freshman, Jordan Jenkins, and they moved him inside. He didn't have the stats or the sack production from that position, but he showed with his explosive workouts, running 4.55 at 260 pounds. You know, he's a player that can come in from day one if he figures out how to compete every down. That could have an immediate impact and become a dominant power rusher in the NFL.
Nolan, who are the kids who really helped themselves in interviews?
Matt Barkley really stood out. I think everybody kind of expected him to be advanced. His pedigree is outstanding. He's much more focused than Carson Palmer, Matt Leinart, Mark Sanchez. He doesn't have that Hollywood background that I think has kind of brought down the former USC quarterback. So he really came out of the interview process, I think, as a very realistic chance at hitting in the top 10. Jonathan Franklin from UCLA has outstanding intangibles, gravitating leader, really highly respected in that program. He definitely stood out, along with Brian Winters from Kent State, very determined and focused. And then Kevin Riddick from North Carolina and Manti Te'o from Notre Dame, the two middle linebackers. I think they both helped themselves in the interview process.
How about losers at the combine, Nolan? There's always a few. What about the guys in the interviews who didn't do so well?
Geno Smith, you know, his board work wasn't very good. The teams I talked to said he came right out and lied in the interview process. There's some background information about him that he wasn't the most forthcoming about, and I think there's a chance that his stock could continue to slide as we go down the process here in the coming months. DeMontre Moore had a poor workout, showed up out of shape, and didn't show any focus or didn't really impress anybody with the way he presented himself in the interview process. Sam Montgomery from LSU, the defensive end, raised a lot of eyebrows. And Cordarrelle Patterson, for his lack of football intelligence, really disappointed teams as well.
Yeah, maybe the most strange thing to ever come out of a combine is, I shouldn't say that. There's been some strange things at the combine, Nolan. But the medical on star Lotulelei, who some people thought could be a number one overall pick.
Yeah, it was a setback for him, but, you know, he's a great kid. You know, the question is whether this was a result of dropping 10 pounds and being dehydrated, or if there is a much more serious issue, and it's something that's going to have to continue to be explored by team doctors, and we'll find out in the next month or two whether it's going to affect his draft stock.
Nolan Naraki on the Combine last week at Indianapolis. Back with more Combine news with senior editor Eric Edholm when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to an NFL edition of Pro Football Weekly featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and senior editor, Eric Edholm. Eric was at the NFL Scouting Combine last week. And, Eric, first off, just in general, we talked to Nolan Naraki, got some of his views on the combine and what happened down there. Were there some players that really stood out to you as you viewed the proceedings?
Yeah, I mean, I think every year you see, you know, skill position guys run fast, and there's no question that the wide receiver position offered a lot of speed. A couple guys chose not to run because of injuries and other situations, but, you know, some real blazers there like Tavon Austin and the kid from Texas, Goodwin. But for me, it was the pair of offensive tackles who ran exceptionally well that I was really shocked by. Lane Johnson, just looking so athletic, the broad jump, you know, the standing high jump, all that stuff, the 40-yard dash, he looked incredible. Teron Armstead, I know Nolan Rocky's been high on him as a second or third rounder. He put an incredible workout in, too. So it's not just the little guys who ran fast. And I thought the offensive tackles also stood up to the media and handled themselves very well.
One of the guys that has intrigued me for several years is a kid out of South Carolina, running back Marcus Lattimore. And prior to not one but two devastating injuries, this kid had top 10 pick written all over him. Now, he came back from the first injury, was playing very well, and had an even more serious injury this past season. He is in the process of rehabbing it now and yet is declared for the draft because at this point there's nothing to gain from him going back to South Carolina for one more year. Did you get a chance to talk to him or at least listen to him, and what are your thoughts about him?
Yeah, I did. I mean, obviously the production just stands off the page, 5 yards carry in college, 38 touchdowns in what, you know, 29 games. But two, you know, back-to-back seasons with knee injury is really about scary. And if there's a kid, I think, who has the resolve to be the next RG3 or Adrian Peterson or one of these guys to come back from a serious knee injury, I think it's Marcus Lattimore. I mean, you could just tell from the instant he met with the media that this is a kid who's very proud in his work ethic. He's determined, exceptionally determined to get back to the level he was at before. It looked like one of the best freshman running backs we've seen in a long time a couple of years ago. And now stands as probably a, you know, third, fourth, fifth round pick just because of the injury, and you don't know what you're getting. I mean, obviously the doctors have looked at the knee. He said the results were some good, some bad. Some teams said, hey, keep working. You still got a ways to go. Others were very impressed with where he's at right now in his rehab, but just from a personality standpoint, guys, I thought he felt like a natural leader, and you can see it in the way he runs on the field, too.
You know, I want to ask about a running back by the name of Monte Ball out of Wisconsin, highly productive on the collegiate level, and there'd always been some questions, well, is he a first or second or third round pick in the NFL, and what kind of back would he be in the NFL? Any early impressions on your part from what you saw in Indianapolis?
Well, if we're talking production, I mean, he's the guy. I mean, 77 rushing touchdowns in 4 years, just incredible. And, you know, the sheer workload he took, Wayne, was so impressive up in Wisconsin. And, you know, I thought he was another impressive kid, you know, well-spoken. Did see, had a hint of diva when he said it's Monte Ball. Yeah, to emphasize the accent on the second E. So, but that said, I think he's a team-first guy. And the production college, obviously, is incredible. I think he would work in a good man-blocking scheme. You know, my guess is he'll be in play at the end of the first round, probably all the way through the early third round. I wouldn't say there's that one standout back in this draft, but there's some decent depth to the class. The question is Ball one of the first two or three backs off the board?
Eric, one other kid we've got to talk about before we let you go. Obviously, Manti Te'o has had a spotlight on him for couple months now. Everything I've heard is that he did well for himself in terms of how he presented himself and in his interviews at the combine. He then ran out and ran 4.82. Now, that is not as devastating as some people think, particularly for an inside linebacker who's going to have a pro day and a chance to improve that time, and yet it did leave some scouts scratching their heads a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Hub. I remember James Laurinaitis running a similar time, something in the low 4.8s, and you're talking about a guy who hasn't missed a snap the last 2 years, a three-down linebacker for the Rams and a very productive one. So, you know, is he quite the enforcer that Laurinaitis is? No. Is he the hitter that Brandon Spikes is for the Patriots? No way. And another guy who ran, I think, a 5-flat, if I'm not mistaken, when he ran at the combine. And you're right about Te'o. You know, everybody I talked to at Notre Dame said, you know, test better there. You know, so we should expect that 40 time to be somewhere in the 4.7 range, which I think is good. I think that's good for his position. To me, I thought he looked fluid in the positional drills. And you mentioned that interview with the media. That was an important step because it eases some of the pressure of having his name being mentioned every time and the fake girlfriend stuff comes up. I also talked to one team who said that he was very focused, very resolved, and I think he felt like he got himself in over his head a little bit, but is fully focused on football right now. At least one NFL team just told me they're not worried about the whole incident off the field.
Senior editor Eric Edholm. We'll have more news and notes coming up when we come back to Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to this off-season edition of Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. Of course, free agency and the new league year begins on March 12th. And some news and notes from around free agency, Hub. Let's start with the Green Bay Packers. They've got a couple of big decisions to make. Number one, it appears, and there had been talk at the Combine, the Packers might consider tagging Greg Jennings, their free agent wide receiver. Reportedly they had offered him in quiet terms last year $7 million to sign, $7 million a year. Jennings feels he obviously can get more than that in free agency. That's what he feels. There's conjecture as to whether he can or can't. But the other guy on the roster that's kind of interesting, another target in that passing game, tight end JerMichael Finley, who will be owed $8.25 million in cap space this coming season if the Packers do nothing with his contract. And he said just earlier this week that he wasn't interested in taking a pay cut.
No, and let me throw in one more player here in addition to the Packers, Wayne. You've also got the New England Patriots' Wes Welker, who's coming off a franchise tag. Pats are not going to franchise him again. Now, they just picked up a lot of cap room with the new Tom Brady deal that we'll talk about in the next segment. So there's thought that they'll try and get a deal done with Welker. But if Welker and Jennings and Finley are all on the free agent market, well, that gives you, you know, at least top flight players at tight end and wide receiver. And where do these guys go? Now, I think the Packers have got the most difficult decision to make on Finley. As far as Jennings, he probably could get more than $7 million guaranteed in free agency, but he's not going to make much more than $7 million a year. The franchise value on a wide receiver is going to be closer to about $10.5 or $11 million. Are the Packers willing to pay that for one season? Are they able to? With Finley, the contract is done. The problem is that he just never seems to be happy, and he's a guy who drops footballs. So how does this whole thing come full circle? The word around the league is the Chicago Bears are going to be releasing Devin Hester and Kellen Davis, their very average tight end, that Mark Trestman and Aaron Cromer were brought in to fix the offense. Phil Emery was very active last year in free agency in the trade market, and a lot of people believe that one of the things the Packers have to keep an eye on, if they release Finley, he might end up in Chicago. If they release Jennings, he could end up in Chicago. If Wes Welker is out there as opposed to Jennings, he could end up in Chicago. So what we're hearing is that the Bears and what the Bears are likely to do could be driving this market and a lot of these decisions for some of these other teams.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see. You know, and again, when you're looking at the Green Bay situation, if you're going to give up Jennings, and apparently they are, then, you know, Finley's another potential weapon. He had a good second half of the season, Hub. I don't know if it was $8 million good. You know what I mean? That's the thing they have to decide.
Well, the real problem here, Wayne, is we try and figure out what this new salary cap era looks like. Remember, part of the reason the NFL players caved in the lockout of 2011 was this perception that even though they were giving up percentages of total football revenue or total revenue, that the cap was going to be going sky high in future years. It was rumored to be going up as early as 13 or 14. Well, so far it hasn't gone up at all. The cap has stayed in a range of about $1 million to $2 million from where it was prior to the lockout. So, what is a quality tight end? Is it $8 million? Is it $10 million? Is it $12 million? Certainly that's a lot of money to pay for a guy who is perpetually unhappy. And I would think a lot of the Packers' decisions could be as much about the way Finley carries himself both on the sideline and in the huddle and off the field as what he does on the field.
And you know how, again, the Packers probably right now in the area of $20 to $22 million in cap space. However, they have pending deals coming up. They want to get Aaron Rodgers done on a long-term deal, and they also want to get Clay Matthews taken care of on a long-term deal. There are several others, including B.J. Raji, that also you would figure are players they'd like to sign sooner rather than later. So that cap space can go away quite quickly. Hey, the other player I wanted to ask you about is Ravens outside linebacker Paul Kruger. He may command one of the best deals of this free agent market after, you know, he was the Ravens' best pass rusher down the stretch last year, right?
Yeah, he came on, the second half of the season. He had an outstanding playoff run, was a difference maker in the Super Bowl. Remember, had the first sack of Colin Kaepernick. And this is a guy who's only got 4 years in the league, his first crack at unrestricted free agency. So he's still young, not a lot of wear and tear on that body. As he split playing time his first couple years in the league, he's got a motor that never stops. And so he is going to be seriously rewarded. Do the Ravens want to keep him? Yeah, they do, but they've got to keep him and Danelle Ellerbe, their middle linebacker, and we don't know if they're going to be able to keep both. So look for him to get big money, we're hearing possibly in Cleveland.
All right, stay tuned. Coming up, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger. Hey, Mike Holmgren might be getting back into the act. We'll be back when Pro Football Weekly returns.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
We are back on an off-season edition of Pro Football Weekly and joined by Associate Editor Arthur Arkush. Arthur, a lot of things happening around the league in free agency, but obviously teams also trying to get their bottom line under the cap. And the New England Patriots are one team that's trying to garner some more cap space, and they did with a restructured contract to quarterback Tom Brady, 3 years, $27 million. Lots of guaranteed money in this deal over the next 5 years. It's not like Brady's giving back money, but he is allowing them to restructure and lengthen this deal to give them some more cap space. How do you see this?
Yeah, I see it just as you described it, Wayne. I think that the three-year, $27 million numbers that were thrown out there at first are a little bit misleading, because what this deal does is it actually guarantees the next 2 years of Brady's salary, which will be $33 million. By the time we're reaching this new deal, I would imagine they're going to be ready to rip it up and go back to the drawing board anyway. So the biggest takeaways for me were that, one, the Patriots believe they've now locked up Tom Brady for life, which of course had to be the end game, the ultimate goal. They think they've done that now. And secondly, as you mentioned, it does allow them some cap flexibility over the next 2 years, $15 million, with so many crucial guys that I know Brady wants to have back, like Wes Welker, you know, heading that list. You've got other guys like Sebastian Vollmer. There's now a little bit more room to operate. So I think this is a win-win situation. And would everyone be willing to take that kind of deal? I'm not quite so sure. But once again, I think the three-year, $27 million figures, that's what Alex Smith got last year. I think it's a little bit misleading once you kind of look under the hood a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's an extension. And so you got to look at what's coming in the next 2 years before you get to those 3 years. You got to look at the guaranteed dollars, which was really the key for Brady, because while he did extend for 3 years, he added $30 million guaranteed dollars to what he is now going to receive. But he also did put his money where his mouth is, and that clearly the base pay he's getting those last 3 years will be well below market, and he did create salary cap room for his ball club. So, you know, Arthur, where I think it gets interesting is they're not the only team in this situation, and the one that jumps to mind is the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were quietly trying to redo Ben Roethlisberger's deal. Now that the Brady story is broke, it's out in the open, they've got to do something with Roethlisberger. He's got a $19.6 million cap hit this year on a team that has 10 players. They're going to take up $100 million of their total $120 million in cap space, and they apparently are desperately trying to get something done with him.
That's right, and you know, actually, as we are speaking, it sounds as if something has gotten done, that the Steelers have agreed to a restructured deal with Roethlisberger that's going to clear around $6 million in cap space for next season. So that's right on the heels of Lawrence Timmons and Antonio Brown also getting deals done. I know we hit on this last week, the Steelers' dire cap situation. It appears now they are starting to create some space, $14 million with these three moves for next year.
Hey, Arthur, how much do you put into the rumors of Mike Holmgren returning to football through the Oakland Raiders? You know, I know, again, Reggie McKenzie, a former Green Bay operative who worked with Holmgren in Green Bay, is now the GM out there. Where does Holmgren fit in? Does he fit in above Reggie McKenzie? Does he fit in below, or is somewhere in the middle?
Well, I think there's definitely, you know, something behind this for sure. I think that Mike Holmgren's tenure in Cleveland was a little bit anticlimactic. I feel that despite them not doing a lot of at the winning side of things, he was able to definitely get some talent for them. They are in a lot better position than they were 2 years ago when he arrived. So when you start to connect the dots, you mentioned the Reggie McKenzie connection. Obviously, they were both in Green Bay. Holmgren is from the West Coast. He has said he wants to get back there. So I think there's a lot to this. There, of course, was also the report from Pro Football Weekly earlier in the offseason regarding John Gruden and a potential football overseeing the operations side of things. So we've been hearing about this for a while. Holmgren has quite the track record. What will get interesting is, as you mentioned, what is the power structure? I can't see a situation where he's going to go in and not have complete control of the football operations. I think that he would be Reggie McKenzie's boss. That's the way I see it. Then there's the other side of things that he has said he has not ruled out wanting to get back into coaching. So what does that mean for Dennis Allen? That's another interesting wrinkle here.
Yeah, and let's be clear on this, guys. Mike Holmgren will not go to Oakland to work for Reggie McKenzie. If this happens, what's going on? Mark Davis has admitted, you know, off the record to close confidants, he knows he's not his dad. He doesn't get the football side. He's very comfortable with Amy Trask running the business side of it for the Raiders, and she's done a great job. They need a new stadium. He needs a very visible public figure to lead that charge. And he has told folks, I don't have anybody out there watching practice every day. I don't have anybody who gets the football operation, the grand vision. And that's what Mike Holmgren would be brought in for. Now, he would certainly keep Reggie McKenzie. Reggie wouldn't necessarily lose any power as the GM. But Mike Holmgren would be being brought in to be the number one guy in that football operation.
Coming up, Steven Jackson's available. Darrell Revis would like to be when Pro Football Weekly continues after these messages. Welcome back to this off-season edition of Pro Football Weekly. Along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, I'm Wayne Larrabee. Hub, some more news around the league. You know, obviously, Steven Jackson, this is a guy, 30-year-old running back, has got a lot of mileage on him. But, boy, I just saw him last year. He's still one of the power backs in this league. He has a contract in St. Louis in which he could opt out in this coming year, and he's elected to do that. He's a free agent. Now, had he stayed in St. Louis, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, he would have made about $7 million this year. Can he get more than that on the open market, do you think, right now?
Boy, this is pretty risky stuff, Wayne, because on one hand, you've got a guy who has been extremely durable and extremely dependable. He's got eight straight 1,000-yard seasons. Even last year, in 2012, where the Rams used him a little less, he had 1,042 yards. I know one of the concerns was he had a career-low 4 touchdowns. That ties the least he's had at any point in the season. He's 29 years old. He'll turn 30 this year. Now, they say about running backs in the NFL, 28 is the age where you got to be very careful. When you look at these guys in free agency, once they hit 28, you don't want to spend a lot of money on them. So he might get, and the problem is when you're only talking 1-2 year deals, they've got to be cap friendly somehow. So what they might very well do with Jackson is a team might give him a 2 or 3 year deal that could be valued at 15, 16 million. They could guarantee 10 or 12 million of it, but they'd have to front load it to get the benefit of it. So there are teams desperate at the position. He'd be a good fit, but you just worry about the future of these guys, especially one who's had all the carries that he has.
And from his standpoint, Hub, don't you get the impression, as I do, that what he really wants to do more than anything else is go to a team that has a chance to make it to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, he wants a ring, and you wonder, is he leaving the Rams too early? I mean, people forget they were undefeated in the West Division last year. They almost got to 500. Jeff Fisher did a great job with them. They've got extra picks in the draft again this year because of the RG3 trade. So, I don't think St. Louis is going to be the top contender, particularly in that division, and that probably is what is motivating Jackson. He's looking for a team that is ready right now to make a Super Bowl run, and there's a few of them out there who do need a running back.
Let's talk about another player of note, the New York Jets and cornerback Darrell Revis. Apparently they're in an impasse. Revis wants a new deal. He's got time left on this contract. Now I hear San Francisco might be interested in bringing him in. I guess further confusing the matter is that Revis is coming off a knee injury. Where is this all looking to shake out?
Well, he doesn't have a lot of time left on the contract. Remember, he did that 4-year deal 3 years ago, and so I think he's just got 1 or 2 years left on this one. He wants to be the highest paid corner, possibly the highest paid defensive player in football. He's coming off an ACL. That's the issue, and you don't know where he's at. Now, I think everybody agrees that right up until the second he tore that ACL, he was absolutely the best cornerback in the NFL. Forget what Richard Sherman might want to say. And so he's going to be in high demand. He wants a new contract. The Jets have to either do a new contract because of how onerous his is at the salary cap, or possibly now's the time to move him to get some value if, in fact, they've decided to completely rebuild that football team. And I don't know that they're looking at a complete rebuild, but darn close to it when you ask yourself, what's the star power on that football team? So he is on the market. The 49ers would be a fascinating trade partner because they've now got extra ammunition after the Alex Smith trade. They're not in great shape or terrible shape cap-wise, but they could get something done, so they're a team to keep an eye on. But I think now, if the Jets say, hey, he's absolutely on the open market, I'd keep an eye on every team in the league because he is the best corner in the league, even though he's coming off that ACL.
We talked earlier, free agency beginning in mid-March. One of the big players usually in free agency, usually the team that steps out first, Hub, are the Washington Redskins. But right now, they've got an issue with the league, and they're being, taxed some cap space, some $18 million worth of cap space for signing contracts in 2010 in the uncapped year that violated the spirit of the league agreement. Tell me a little bit about this suit that they're bringing against the league to get this money back.
Well, the penalty is highly controversial. It was them and the Dallas Cowboys who were penalized cap space for signing players in the 2010 season that took advantage of the fact that it was an isolated uncapped year. But at the end of the day, you got to ask yourself, if there was no cap, what spirit are you violating? I mean, it was almost like the NFL owners had an unwritten agreement. We're going to say it's uncapped, but we're not going to spend the money. That's why the players filed their collusion case against the league. The players lost that case in front of the master arbiter, and so the league turned around and penalized the Skins. Now, they've got $18 million in cap penalties this year and next year. This is a team that needs to add a few more players to get better. Minimally, we know they're not going to be spending a lot of money this year, but they want to get that $18 million back so they don't have to cut any more players than they have to.
Coming up, where's Mike Wallace going? And what about the pass rushers, Dwight Freeney and Osu Mignora? More NFL news coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. We continue with this off-season edition of Pro Football Weekly along with Hub Arkush. I'm Wayne Larrabee. Hub, let's continue with some team interests now in free agency. Panthers, Carolina Panthers, interested in upgrading their wide receiving core and really bringing some speed to the party. Mike Wallace is available from Pittsburgh. What kind of a fit would this be?
Well, we know that the Steelers don't want to say goodbye to Mike Wallace, but he had a terribly disappointing contract year last year after his holdout. They feel they've got some depth there now with Emmanuel Sanders and Antonio Brown, and we talked about their salary cap woes, so it's hard to see how he stays. Then you look at the Carolina Panthers. Steve Smith appears to be ageless, but he has been the only target, the only threat on that football team. Now, if you were to put Mike Wallace on the other side of the football team, you may now finally be arming Cam Newton with what he needs to be almost unstoppable. He would be a really interesting fit. Smith can go deep, but he'd be a little better as an underneath and deep middle zone type receiver, with Wallace the home run hitter and also running the quick slants and maybe getting involved in the running game a little bit on some of the reverses and trick stuff that you can do with Cam Newton. So it's a really good fit. Now, obviously, Panthers can't comment at all. Ron Rivera, the head coach, can't comment. It would be tampering. He won't be a free agent until March 12th. But behind the scenes, we're hearing rumblings that Wallace is a guy that the Panthers could be very interested in.
A couple of veteran free agent pass rushers, Dwight Freeney from the Colts, Osu Mignora from the Giants. Now, both of these guys, Hub, have Super Bowl rings. Matter of fact, Osu's got two. Atlanta Falcons are continually trying to upgrade that defense, and one of the areas they have to get better at is rushing the quarterback, apparently. They're interested in these two guys. What do you hear on this front?
You know, Wayne, the only dependable pass rusher that the Atlanta Falcons have, in spite of the great season they had, is John Abraham. And John Abraham had a renaissance year. He had a comeback year. He was a Pro Bowler, but he also got banged up late in the season and was not able to be a factor in the NFC title game and in key moments when they needed him. As a matter of fact, he missed the second half of the divisional playoff game, and he just wasn't himself. Now, you look at two premier pass rushers near the end of their careers. Osu Mignora just 31. You could get 3-4 more years out of him. Freeney at 33. We don't know what's left on the tires there. But they're both going to be unrestricted, so it's simply a question of how you make them fit under the cap. Maybe just getting one is a big help. If you were to get both of them and now you had a three-man rotation at the end position of John Abraham, Dwight Freeney, and Osu Mignora, a little bit of an aging tandem, no question about that. But I'll tell you what, you know, that's going to give you some real pass rush, and that appears to be what's missing from this Falcon defense, because you've now got anchors in the middle with Sean Weatherspoon, who's become a Pro Bowl caliber linebacker. The other kid out of Missouri, William Moore, at safety. You still got Asante Samuel playing at a high level at one corner, and you know, I don't know what they do with Brent Grimes. Remember, they franchised him last year, and he tore an ACL. So if you can just add one or two more big time pass rushers, suddenly you move this defense to a different level.
All right, Hub, 2 points here in this segment I want to make with you. And first off, San Francisco loaded with draft choices. I'm going to get to them in a minute. But free agency in general, Hub, is this going to be a buyer's market or a seller's market? And I ask that because we talked a moment ago about the Redskins suing the NFL to try to get $18 million in cap space back. The other team that was basically docked at cap space were the Dallas Cowboys for their infractions in 2010. Now, you know, these are two big players on the free agency market. Does this mean we're not going to see maybe as much activity and we're not going to see the prices for these guys on free agency driven up the way they have been in the past?
You know, Wayne, I think that'll be one factor. The other factor is you've got to remember we've got, what, six new general managers? I think we've got eight or nine over the last two seasons. And these are guys who are not going to jump out in their first or second free agency period and make huge deals that they can end up wearing like anchors around their neck. So when you combine all the young GMs, all of whom say they want to do this through the draft, not in free agency, you've got the fact that, as I said, the cap really hasn't moved more than a couple million bucks in 3 years. And then you've got some of the big spenders with less money than usual to to spend, that suggests that you're not going to see a lot of the huge deals that we're used to seeing at this time of the year.
You know, the San Francisco 49ers, as I mentioned a moment ago, they're one of the younger teams in the league, at least in terms of maturity and in terms of having fewer players over the age of 30 years old, which seems to be the line of demarcation in the NFL these days in terms of paying people. But the Niners have a lot of relatively young players in their prime. They also have 15 draft picks this season, including three in the top 50. They've got a lot of room to work in terms of trades, don't they?
Well, they really do. And you know, I know the Baltimore Ravens are the defending world champions. They're the Super Bowl champs, not taking anything away from them. But nobody will convince me that the 49ers weren't the most talented team in the NFL in 2012. As you say, they're relatively young. You know, you got a few guys getting up there in Justin Smith, Carlos Rogers. But for the most part, the nucleus of this team is going to be around for a while. They've got 12 draft picks in hand. They figure to get three compensatory picks. That's 15 picks. You mentioned three in the top 50. They've got five of the top 93. One of the things you got to ask yourself is, should Trent Baalke be dealing these picks? Because who's drafted better over the last 3 or 4 years in the San Francisco 49ers? So at the end of the day, whether they use those picks or whether they start packaging for trade, we mentioned in the last segment they could be a player for Darrelle Revis. The 49ers, they figure to get better before they get worse.
Absolutely. Stay tuned. We've got the Publisher's Pen coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish. Hub?
You know, Wayne, the remarkable thing about the National Football League is everything they touch turns to gold. You know, we know it was just, let's say 15 years ago, people bemoaned the fact that there was no hot stove league for the NFL. Once the season ended, it was like being lost in the desert for 6 months before teams went back to training camp. There was interest in the draft, but that was about it. But then with free agency beginning in earnest back in 1993 and really picking up steam in the mid to late 90s, and the way the draft has exploded, you know, you've got a real active hot stove season. And now, over the last 5-6 years, we've seen the NFL scouting combine become almost as big as the draft. It's almost like another one of these mini events following the Super Bowl. All the media is there. You've got agents coming out from everywhere. Every team sends half the front office, and it's to look at these top 300 players and get the measurables, have them do their workouts, get to meet them, give them their physicals. Now, the one thing I know I'm going to be redundant here that I want to really stress, there are teams who destroy themselves at the combine. They get caught up in how these kids work out in shorts and t-shirts, and they move them up the draft board. They talk to a kid in an interview, and they ask the wrong questions. The bottom line is that what matters about this combine is the impression you get of the young man face-to-face and the physical evaluation, the medical evaluation you give him. As far as his 40-yard dash time in shorts, he ain't going to get to play football in shorts.
Well said, Ub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkish and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.